Crema.
Isaac Okoro outside with it for the Cavs. Over to Delly. Delly's had great minutes off the bench tonight. Left corner to Garland. Garland holding on to it. Shot clock's at four. He'll fire the three. Count it. Wow. A new pro high for Garland.
Broadcasting live.
Ish.
From Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse on the sunny shores of beautiful Lake Erie.
Gana, se roba la línea de fondo. Deja picando para Wey, que la pone dos y con falta. Sí, señor. La asistencia número 16 para los Cavaliers en 16 canastas convertidas.
In downtown Cleveland.
Hello, Cleveland. Hello, Cleveland.
You've tuned in to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hey! Knocked it down!
Now, here are your hosts, Rafa, J-Bike, and Joe G.
Nerds!
Hey, everybody. Yeah, hey.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, hey. And welcome to Wine and Gold Radio. We did the trade deadline special a couple weeks ago, but now we're back in full force.
Did we really trade the Polka?
We did. We traded the Polka for, I think, cash considerations. It was not bad, but, you know, it was weight on our cap.
Wine and Gold Radio.
I am Joe G, and I'm here. I'm joined by Rafa Hernandez Brito, back from the Final Four.
Yes, that's me.
And Juan Miguel, John Michael, voice of the Cavaliers. John?
Guys, I have something to tell you. Ready for this?
Yes.
So this week, it's very rare, as you guys know, that we get 2 days together without a game, right? So yesterday, for the first time in, I can't even remember, since the All-Star break for sure, but I actually did not spend the evening watching NBA basketball, right? And taking notes and getting ready. I actually watched a movie. And I think you guys get on me all the time about my movie selection and how it doesn't quite reconcile with your own. I think I got a movie that I liked that you guys would like as well.
Let's hear it.
I think.
It's not going to be Happy Gilmore.
Who's in it? Who's in it?
Only one person. Well, I'm not going to say. Only one person that I recognize. Have you guys seen Chicago 7? Nothing?
No. What is it?
Chicago 7.
Chicago 7.
I don't know.
It just came out. I thought it just came out, which it did. But it just came out.
Is it related to the Hateful Eight?
That's where you should start, right?
Yeah.
No, totally not related to the Hateful Eight. It is about the protesters to the Vietnam War Democratic Convention, Chicago, 1968.
Ooh, okay.
See, that sounds great. Bell.
Now, is that what that song came out? The Night Chicago Die.
I don't know that
song. You don't know that song?
I don't know if that's...
No, you don't know the song, The Night Chicago Die?
I don't know if that's... I don't know.
But that's not related to the movie.
I don't know if that has to do with the convention.
Yeah, it might be about the fire.
And I don't know. But I'm you know what? John said that, and I feel bad because a couple shows ago I said John had terrible taste in movies. And that's been bothering me because I thought, you know, that was a dumb thing to say.
No, it's not.
No, it is.
A correct thing to say.
No, it's not because no one has terrible taste in anything. Everyone has their own taste.
It's just different taste.
It's different
taste. If it makes you feel any better, I didn't take offense to it.
Yeah. So what is the movie? Was it a good movie?
It's about the Chicago 7, right? I highly recommend it. You guys have to watch. These guys, for our listeners, they make fun of me because my movie watching is simple. I like either comedies or something that has an ending where you're happy and you walk away and it's all over and everything's great. Anything where it's a mystery at the end. And I also like historically based movies, right? Any movie that ends with writing and they tell you what happened to the people instantly goes up a couple notches for me. And this was one of those movies. And it was up for Oscar nominations.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll check it out. I like movies that are based on real events. Like John just
said.
That's
what you like.
I'm a little more interested if I know I'm watching something that actually happened.
Me too.
As opposed to Jason Bourne getting stuck in Mars. You know?
My movie tastes are real simple. Drugs and violence. Yeah. Anything, it's true. Anything with those two things, I'll always, almost always watch it.
then this is your movie, right? Abby Hoffman, the Chicago 7, right?
Ooh, Abby Hoffman, you know. Okay, I know him.
Okay. See, no, that sounds like this sounds like a good movie I could get behind, John. Yeah. Thank you for the recommendation. I do appreciate that.
Yeah, so the guy who actually, the only person I recognized afterwards, I kept looking at who the guy who was playing Abby Hoffman. I'm like, boy, that guy looks really familiar. Can't figure out who it is. It's the guy who plays Borat. What's his name?
Oh, wait a minute. Sacha Baron Cohen, who
right.
I love.
He's,
yeah.
And he was spectacular in that movie. And I don't like Borat. That makes me uncomfortable. I don't like any of that stuff.
I love
but the actor, he was fantastic. And again, he was up for an Oscar.
A real question?
Wait a minute. Yes. First, I have to say John sold the movie right there. He kind of buried the lead a little bit but I love Sacha Baron Cohen. So now I guarantee I'll watch this movie.
My name is Borat.
Is that his accent when he speaks, or he's still making fun of somebody?
It
kind of bothers me because
British.
I can't figure out.
Who? Hey. Sacha Baron Cohen? He's
yeah,
British.
Like he accepted the award, but he sounded like he was Borat. So it bothers me.
I love it.
My name is Borat.
Wait till you hear his accent in this movie. And again, it's why I couldn't place him until the very end, until I saw the credits. I went, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
See, very good.
That's Jean Giraud from NASCAR movie. Ricky Bobby, Talladega Night.
See, it all circled back to a Will Ferrell reference. Yeah. Guys, Cavs on the road this week again. We're not on the road with them. But,
thank God.
Yeah, exactly. And took one on the chin in Miami, 20 straight. I know that's
– I'm happy because you guys would have said it was my fault because I didn't do that game.
Yeah, you're right. We would have. Yeah. In Miami, there was one play. John, Rafa, you were doing Final Four. We'll get to that in a second. There was one play in that game, John. I don't know if you remember. Duncan Robinson shot a three, and it bounced off the back of the back of the rim, went shot straight up in the air over
back
the backboard, and then zoop right back down through the basket. And I thought to myself, that's kind of the Cavs are kind of a Wile E. Coyote kind of thing. And when they go to Miami, little things like that go wrong. When you're having a losing streak, little things like that always go right for the other team, wrong for yours. That was kind of symbolic. Tough game.
That summed up an entire decade plus
right.
of basketball
right.
in Miami. That one shot, Rafa, it hit the back iron and literally went twice as high.
right.
Backboard. I mean, it went two backboards up and dropped. Sure enough,
straight through. And that's when I thought, and I said, man, you know, like I said, Wile E. Coyote, that's the kind of crap.
Like
just,
start the bus and let's get out of here.
right, exactly. Yeah. Like, yeah, start the bus. That means it's over.
The Cavs were hanging around just close enough to still maintain striking distance. That thing went through and exactly.
yeah. It
right.
just right.
Let's pack it up and let's move on. To tennis.
exactly. And I have to say that a really excellent bounce back in San Antonio. And you don't get to take credit for that either on Monday night because, again, you were doing Final Four.
Yeah.
But Darius Garland was spectacular, scored the first 9 points, Cavs' first 9 points, and didn't let up. And that's what I loved about him most was that there was no let up. A lot of times guys will have a hot first half and cool off. He didn't.
You know what I liked about it, Joe, is that he did not force a single shot, a single play all night long, and he shattered his career high.
Yeah.
Right? And had 7 assists.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And he got his teammates involved. And, you know, when you're hot, you tend to have heat checks. And you tend to – not one time did he force a shot or a play all night long and just quarterback this team to an impressive victory, a basically wire-to-wire victory, a little bit of a vanilla start for the Cavs in that first quarter. But after they took command late in the frame – a huge part of that, of course, was the play of Garland, which was spectacular all night long.
That's what happened to us athletes when we were in the zone.
But the basket looks like the ocean, right?
Yeah. And you throw in a golf ball.
Hey, you know what? They skunked the Spurs, and I can't really remember that happening. But the Spurs were at the end of a 9-game homestand, and I thought about this, and they were really poor on the homestand, San Antonio, and they have the rodeo and all that, but they had a really poor homestand. We've been home for long homestands. Is there such a thing as too long of a homestand?
I don't think so.
No? Because I do.
It looked like it.
Yeah, after about 6 or 7, if you have a long homestand after about 4 or 5 games at home, I can't speak for you guys. I'm ready to get back on the road, or I'm ready for the team to get back on the road. Always. There can be a too long of a homestand.
Well,
you hear the same music, and again, players are creatures of habit. They're used to playing, then leaving. nine games at home is weird.
Which means probably 15 days, even if
that's
they
what
play.
I mean, right. It's probably 15, 16 days. That's a weird thing, and I wonder if that's – because I can't remember San Antonio looking that bad, to be honest.
Well,
bad.
My television partner, Austin Carr, unprompted, said that's just too long for players. He, in the middle of the game, he said, this is what a team looks like. The Spurs went 2-7. You guys, yeah. And they gave an average of 118 points. This is still the 10th-ranked defense in the NBA, giving up 118 points a game during that homestand.
Yeah.
So, again, the AC thought, this team doesn't look right, and he thought in part it was due to that homestand that seemed way too long. And now, by the way, the Spurs finished the season with 17 of 24 on the road for a team hanging on for dear life in that Western Conference. Keep an eye on that as things roll along.
You and I talked about it, and looking at the schedule when they were here, if that team has to play in the play-in tournament, they're going to be fried by the time if they even advance.
San Antonio.
They finished with three sets of back-to-backs. They back and forth on the road and away, and then if you have to play in, worse if you're like seventh or eighth, that you have to win. I mean, ninth and tenth, that you got to win two games.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Anyway, the thing is, no matter what the Cavs record was, we missed you. We missed our friend Rafa really badly. Rafa was doing the Final Four this weekend, and you got to call. You got to make an iconic call.
I got lucky again. You know, I forget about the final shot by Jalen Suggs. That whole game was so well coached. Mm-hmm. You know, UCLA had the perfect plan of taking the air out of the ball throughout the game and then running when they wanted. But Jalen Suggs, before that, had made a block on Cody Riley and then grabbed the same rebound and threw the bounce pass almost like from foul line to foul line, right? Skip pass to through Timmy, who I think you should get that mustache
I don't want to look like Timmy.
Okay. And then, everybody, you learn of a couple of guys that probably earned their right to be drafted or to be at least considered to be in the NBA, Ben Juzang, one of them. And everybody says Jalen Suggs is ready and should be like a lottery pick.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, lucky again. Yeah. And the funny thing that happened to me was that I went to bed. I didn't even know that somebody had posted. There's somebody on Twitter that does a mashup of all the plays, like when there's a buzzer beater or something. He'll grab different languages. And so he put Jim Nance with everybody.
They're awesome, too.
Yeah. Kevin Kugler, who was my partner in English on Westwood One, who I think is wonderful. And actually had the best call because he didn't lose it at all. He just kept his composure and actually painted everything as it was happening. They had a Russian dude, and they had Sean McDonough, who I don't know who he was. I think he was doing like ESPN International or something.
Yeah.
And usually, and I talked about this with John, it's like, as a play-by-play announcer, you don't want your color guy to get in between your call.
I love this.
You know?
I love this.
I heard mine, and my color guy, who is a legendary coach, he coached the Puerto Rican national team. He's done TV for ESPN. He's done NBA for years. He also lost it, right? And I was like, but then I went and heard Billy Raftery, Grant Hill, Jim Jackson, everybody just got it. And the universal word in basketball, I don't care what language you're listening to, is, oh, wow.
That's the one time when I like when the color analyst jumps the play-by-play guy.
Yeah.
That's when you know something happened. That
it was unbelievable.
He can't control himself.
It was unreal.
16 segundos le restan al encuentro. No hay tiempo por pedir. Ganando por dos Gonzaga. Juzang con la pelota. Lo marca Kispert por la derecha. Juzang penetra en el centro. Levanta el doble. Falla el tiro. Recoge el rebote y la pone. Oh! 29 puntos para Juzang. El triple en camino. Sienta Jalen Suggs con el triple en la chicharra le dice buenas noches a UCLA y por segunda ocasión en la historia de Gonzaga pelearán por el título de campeón universitario. La locura de marzo vive.
We don't like that, Joe.
Yeah.
We're set against that.
The good thing is that I was going so crazy I didn't even hear my partner. going crazy as well. So I go to bed, and I wake up the next morning, and my phone is going crazy with all these notifications, people liking that tweet that this guy posted, right? And he said, you know, Judge, which one is your favorite one? And a lot of people say, oh, the Spanish one, but I don't know what he's saying. I hate when people say that. I want people to say, we like your call because we love what you said, or we like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I hate, even though I like that people take enjoyment of me going crazy, I'd rather them say, you know, I would like to hear what the Russian dude was saying.
Yeah.
So I could make a judgment, because I think Kugler and Nance and McDonough, even though his voice cracked again, they were great. They were great at it. You know, he's like, it's so natural that you can't prepare for that. So I said, when Jalen Sog went in, I said, you know, the triple on the way, and then the clock has struck midnight for Cinderella. Jalen Sog hits the triple on the buzzer and great says good night to UCLA. Well, this guy said, you know, I was crying tears of sadness, but then when I heard you call, my tears turned into joy, because I can't believe that you put out the Cinderella and the Buenas Noches thing. Yeah. So that I like that, when people get a crack of what I said, as opposed to like just me screaming.
Not well. I mean, your call was tremendous, really incredible. And I also, you know, I've read in retrospect, people talking about Gonzaga, how they, you know, lost the following night. People have said that they celebrated too much that in that victory, and they had nothing left. And I thought, what were they supposed to do? Not celebrate that
right.
ending?
Let's clue those people in, too, by the way. Baylor destroyed everybody.
Everybody.
Right.
I mean, I don't care what Gonzaga did.
Yeah.
Too much, too little, forget it. Yeah. Baylor, there was no stopping that. They demolished.
And
that tournament, they demolished that tournament.
Yeah, the reason Gonzaga looked that bad is the same reason Houston looked that bad on Saturday.
Yep, right.
It's because Baylor was so prepared and so ready and laser focused on getting that title. And I think it's amazing when you think about what Scott Drew has been able to do with that program after 18 years there, when he took a job that I don't think there was a parent in this world that would give a kid to a coach in Baylor after what happened there in the 2000s, you know, when somebody got murdered by a teammate. And it is incredible
what this man has been
able to do for 18 years. And you got to give it to the university for sticking with him, too, because it wasn't easy at the beginning. They couldn't even play interconference games. They just basically were like intramural the first couple of years.
For those who don't know that backstory, it is well worth Googling. I mean, it is, that program wasn't down. That program was as close to gone as a program could ever be. You will not believe what you are reading in terms of what happened at that Baylor basketball program prior to, you know, to Drew taking over. It's really incredible. It's incredible what has happened over the last decade and a half plus with that program.
Yeah, it was the culmination of a great tournament. A great tournament.
We missed it.
A comeback tournament. Yeah, we missed it. Great comeback tournament. Great ending. Our friend Rafa got to make an incredible call. It all turned out well. Hey, we're going to talk a little college hoops with our next guest. It's a little pro hoops, Cavs.
Jimbo.
With Jim Jones, the legendary Jim Jones. He's going to come in and tell us some good stories. He'll be back with us, segment two, and we'll talk to the great Jones.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jeff Phelps from Fox Sports Ohio. When I'm looking for the absolute best, most in-depth Cavalier content, I don't listen to Wine and Gold Radio.
There's more of this.
Get that taste. Woo! Let me get that taste.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
The Cav City Collection is now available online at cav.com/shop. Rep the land with jerseys, hats, tees, and more, inspired by the Cav City Edition uniforms.
Love running the lane, left side dance, pow! With two hands.
The Cavaliers, in a partnership with the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, introduced the team City Edition uniform, featuring a design and style that reflects the grit, attitude, and spirit of Cleveland's rock and roll roots. See the whole collection at cav.com/shop.
I need a quickie on WHK.
I'm Alyssa Dombrowski, basketball communications coordinator for the Cavaliers and good friend of Joe Gabriel, Rafa Hernandez Brito, and John Michael. And I can still think of a very long list of things I would do before listening to Wine and Gold Radio.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Wine and Gold Radio. We gotta have Jones put the bass on the jingle.
That's what I'm thinking. I wonder if Jim Jones could do a Jim Jones jingle for us.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, you know what? I'm in the kitchen because that's where the best light is and the best chairs are. My bass is in the other room with all my stuff, but. We'll see.
We'll figure it out.
We'll see.
Who's your guest today, Jay?
Well, as you can hear the wonderful voice of Jim Jones, Cavs legend, color analyst for Cavs Radio, the incomparable Jim Jones. There is only one Jim Jones. Jim, thank you so much for joining Wine and Gold Radio.
Yes, sir, it is.
The legendary Marquette
alum.
Thank you.
Glad to be here, guys. Don't give me any more... You don't give me any more pats on the back because I've run out of money. I only got enough for you and Rafa. So, John, make sure you don't say anything nice because I don't have any more money.
No per diem this season. So, Jim's out of cash.
I know. That little brown envelope.
Do you miss that, John? John. Oh. Hey, look it. Rafa, I miss that per diem.
You and everybody.
My average money in my wallet's gone from about $150 to about four. I can't get a drive-thru. I don't have enough money in my wallet.
And just so everybody knows, you know, all of us, all four of us here, we travel with the team in normal days. Mm-hmm. So on the road trip, before we take off, Mark Cashman, who was a guest here at Wine and Gold Radio, will give us an envelope with the per diem, a cash envelope.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe G sit together on the plane, and we'll be like, come on, hit me. We'll be like, what's his name from One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest?
Martini.
Hit me.
Yeah, I miss those days. Jim, I miss hanging out with you on the road. I got to say, I mean, I don't get the normal Jones philosophy on the road. I get a better understanding of the team from you.
Yeah, I miss that because, you know, we used to have a good time until the time I upset him. John, you remember, when was that? Were we in Seattle or was that in Portland? And I said something negative about the Browns because I'm not a big football fan, right? What did I say? I said something. I said, F the Browns or something like that. And I thought Joe G was going to come at, what are you talking about? These are the Cleveland Browns. You're full of, you know what? What the heck is going on? And I don't even think we rode the cabs back together after that. I think you went in another cab. So when I got back to the room, I looked in the mirror. I said, I should have kept those thoughts to myself.
No, you never, Jim, never keep your thoughts to yourself, please. I remember one time last year you fanned me. And I don't want to say I was upset about it, but I thought, man, that was Jim Jones just fanned me. I said something you didn't like, and you just put that big paw in my face and said, no.
I did that.
You did. You fanned me and walked away, and I thought, wow, man.
Well, it probably was old age and sugar. You know, once your sugar gets up a little bit, you know, you get a little ornery, and then you got to make allowances for old people. We've all been through that. What's wrong with Papa today? I don't know. He's had one of those days. Maybe he didn't get his sugar in something, you know. So I apologize. I really do.
No, please. Again, don't. I almost consider it an honor. I even told my buddy. I said, man, Jones just fanned me today. He did.
Now that we have you here, Jim, can we get something straight? We want to hear the story from you. Because we keep telling different versions of the story.
Well, which one?
Who got you into thinking or into being interested in playing the national anthem before one of the Cavs game with your bass? Was it you? John? Was it myself? Was it the two of us?
It was you. I mean, hey, Joe, what a lead in, right? Rafa, that was weak. It was Rafa because you had told me the stories about your dad. And the times that I did bring my guitar, I bought the acoustic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know anything about acoustic basses, the strings are brass.
Yeah.
They beat the S out of your hands. And they're hard to play. And at the time, I was just trying to get my shapes and my fingering down. And I didn't want to go there and bust because I like to do things like I was always this good. I never had to practice. You know, I'm just good. You know, but during this protocol, John, Should I tell him the story about the lady handing out the stats?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Yes, you should.
I think all stories are fair game, Jerry.
Oh, they are? Oh, okay.
Yeah. We can edit later.
We're sitting there, we're sitting there in pregame. And in Chicago, I'm damn near in Austin's lap, which is very uncomfortable. And then on the other side, John is almost in the lady. There's a lady to your left, right?
And you're
in her lap, you know. And then we're just squinched in there. And this lady comes by and says, what kind of stats you want, whatever. Tim tells her what he wants, John and Austin, what you want. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, and I'm going, and John looks down at me and he's laughing, you know. And Tim doesn't know what to do because he's new. And so when she gets near me, I go, hey, listen, I don't want no stacks. Why not? I said, you got a cold. You're coughing. But I'd already read 3 or 4 articles on the virus, right? And Chicago was one of the initial places. New York, Chicago is where it hit. And I'm telling you that she got mad at me, and probably so, but I didn't care. So she would go to the other side of me, hand Tim his, John and Austin. And they're just dying. And then one time she takes one and she throws it. Tim is here and I'm here. And she throws it down on the desk between me and Tim. And I take my elbow and I move and I throw it on the floor. And then the protocol came that evening. Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember
that, John?
That day. I got to say, Jimmy, you were before your time, man. That you were the one who said, I don't want to be using all these headsets that are sitting in these arenas. I'm bringing my own headset from home. Yep. Despite the fact that that could be a pain in the neck. We were getting on the plane and everything and trying to transport that. It's so worth it. And look where we are right now. You were years before your time.
Yeah. Well, let me tell you, I can't take all the credit, and don't tell her, but it was my wife. Let me tell you, I would be out all day in the streets doing what men do, shaking hands and everything. And I'd come home and she'd be waiting for me in the kitchen. Hey, Jim. I said, hey, babe, how you doing? I go up to kiss her. She'd go,
wash your hands.
Wash your hands.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've eaten with these dirty hands for 36 years. Now all of a sudden, and nobody's caught a disease yet. She said, wash your hands, Jim. And that's what got me into washing my hands all the time.
Yeah.
All the time, because then when they showed recently, her and I were watching CNN or something, and they were shut the eye when they went in an argument like 30 years later. And she looks at me, she goes, I know.
So, Jim, how has this year been? I mean, it's been so different for everybody. How's it been different for you, not being on the road, not being able to watch these guys in practice, talk to them after practice? The guys love you. And after practice shoot around, I mean, guys are always going to you, getting some knowledge from you. How's this year been for you trying to cover the team?
I don't miss it. Hmm. I mean, I don't miss it because all we do is broadcast. The relationships you miss, but some of those have already been established. Mm-hmm. But I don't miss it. I mean, I told Dave a couple of weeks ago, I said, Dave, if they don't want me to fly anymore, you know, they can save those $2,000 or $3,000 and stay at home. I mean, all it means for me is less poundage on my legs. No more 2 o'clock getting off a plane in a blizzard with an icy step that so far I haven't fell, but it's coming. You know, all of this stuff, John, you know how it is. You know, we lay down after we come back and we eat a lunch or something and you're tired as heck and you want to at least get in 2 hours. And all of a sudden this guy's knocking on your door. He's picking up your darn bags. I mean, it's just, you know, and then you have no priority. And then we can't eat where they eat. They eat in a room with filet mignon, a chicken parmesan, big bowls of French fries and salad and soups and waters. And we're not allowed to go there. Of all the people that could spend their own money for the Ritz-Carlton room service, why do we can't even go in the room? I mean, to me, that is just irritating.
Jim, you know, they'll listen to you because you're the legendary Jim Jones. Make sure
that doesn't mean a thing.
When you bring up that thing to our boss about not traveling and saving money, make sure they save everything but that yellow envelope. Please.
I got to tell you, the biggest thing, I know you agree with this, Jim, the shoot around where we don't have to be there, where we can right where we are and look at Zoom. And now I miss not seeing shoot around, right? Yeah. But not having to go there and being able to sit here and take it all in and talk to the coach and talk to the players like this. I could get used to it, right?
Yeah, it could be the thing of the future.
Yeah.
I can see it. But see, Joe G has to do stories. Joe, you can still do your stories, right, from virtual, right?
I can, but to be honest, Jim, I really miss the relationships with the guys. That really affects how I do my job. Because, again, I really try and get underneath the basketball stuff with these guys, and it's impossible through group Zoom calls. You just can't get to know these guys. You can hear basketball stuff and a little bit about them, but you don't really get to know them on the Zoom calls. So I don't – to your point, Jim, I don't miss getting off the plane at 2 a.m. I don't miss the icy stuff. I don't miss all that, but I really miss getting to know the players.
Yeah. I got a close call this past weekend during the semifinal game between Gonzaga and UCLA just to get an idea of, yes, it is almost the same guys, but especially I have a lot more experience than you do, like calling the games off of screen from my years at Univision, where the budget's also in Spanish, but I was doing the Final Four, and we found out the day before that we were doing it from the studios, right? So UCLA comes down, USAN comes in, puts it up, misses, gets his own rebound, puts it back in, ties the game at 90. The angle that we were being fed changed to like it was a timeout.
Oh.
So I went to say, you know, USAN has 29 points, and next thing I know, it sucks dribbling past half court. So I caught the play when he was already caught. He was like already gathering to shoot the three pointer to close the game. Wow. And then I said to myself, what would have happened if I had totally missed this call? And I think that's one of the things that I do miss just my periphery angles when I'm at the arena, just so I can bring more, I can add more to my call, as opposed to just getting lucky and catching something in one of the few angles we get. So,
yeah.
Jimmy, do you still watch college basketball? And if so,
I don't watch it during the season because I have a phobia against college basketball. Let me tell you what it is. The coaches, they try to make the coaches the stars, you know, and that always bothered me. You know, that always bothered me. We had Al McGuire, but heck, he had the top five best New York players, the two best Illinois players, and the best player in Wisconsin history in me playing. But it was all about Al, and he knew it. And through his narrative dialogue, he would always say, "Well, Jim Jones paved my driveway. Yeah, but I bought you that big ass house and built you know." And so I've just always been anti-coach, you know. Yeah. I've been back to coaching because you got to remember, I only played 1 year of varsity. I played 1 year of freshman ball, and then I played 1 year of varsity. And the midway through we were playing Jacksonville. They had a big 7-foot center named David Brent. And that was my last game, March 2026. You know, I left Marquette, and I never looked back, you know.
You're anti-head coach and kind of that.
Jones is the first player.
Well, I was going to ask him what he thought about Shaka Smart. Now there's a head coach that heading to Marquette that I think you like.
Yeah, well, it's all about recruiting.
Yeah,
you know, and Shaka can get him. He can get the athletes. I mean, I remember Shaka because he used to play against my best friend had an AAU team that Caron Butler played with down in Racine, which is about 25 miles from Milwaukee. And they used to play Shaka's teams, and they were always super athletic, super smart, super tough. Then the one thing you have to give Shaka credit for lately, over the last 6-7 years, he's gotten some pretty good big guys, 6'10", he's been able to see talent in those big guys.
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to find guards. They're a dime a dozen. But to find bigs that can play fast and do all the things that are necessary today is rare, but he seems to have a knack. And I wish him the best. Hey, I could have saved the other coach. Because I told him at a dinner one time, I said, listen, I said, if you ever need any help recruiting, I forgot that there's a 40-year difference. All the people I knew were probably dead, but I did tell him to give me a call and I could help him. You know, I'll make a call to some people. He never called, you know, but Shaka doesn't need me because Shaka's from Milwaukee and everybody knows him. Everybody in that five-state area of Indiana, Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin, they know Shaka from AAU. He can get them, and he's going to come out with some exciting teams.
We were just talking about how important tradition and being an alum means in college basketball more than any other sport, because Hubert Davis just got the job at UNC. And I was at the Final Four, everybody was talking about maybe Scott Drew or maybe Mark Few could go get a bigger job. And I said, in order to get that UNC job, you have to be an alum of University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. You have to have Dean Smith written somewhere in your curriculum in order to be – you don't want to come in and have to understand – the tradition, the boosters, I think, you know, the parents will be happy to give their kids to go to UNC for Hubert Davis.
There's two guys that have to give you approval. One is supposedly the greatest player to ever play, Michael Jordan. And the other one is the guy who we have labeled as the greatest technician for basketball strategy is Larry Brown. And those two guys, Larry Brown made a statement that they should hire from within. And that was good enough for, you know, for the young kid. And then if Michael approved it, shoot, he was in. And Hubert's been loyal. Remember, he was on ESPN for a long time, for about, 2 years maybe? 2 years? And then he went back to college. And I thought he had a future in broadcasting. But he likes the college game. He likes that teaching. And that's what college is about, teaching.
Jim, do you think there's something to that where, you know, a homegrown player – coaching his team, coaching his alum. Do you think there's something to that? I talked to Rafa. Football's different, but I talked to him when Jim Tressel came back to Ohio State and Urban Meyer. It kind of brought some Ohio back. You started getting Ohio kids. Do you think it matters to be where, you know, to be from where you're coaching?
I think it's huge. I think it's huge because relationships and being able to get through that front door, you know, to tell your message and your story is so important. Especially the parents, you know. And then if you come from a winning program, that makes it a lot easier too. North Carolina, I mean, come on. If there's the job better than North Carolina, I want to see it. Yeah. It sure isn't Duke, because Krzyzewski's been there so long. You know, I don't know. But I'm telling you, the greatest job in America is North Carolina, just because of the mentality and the history. It just keeps going on and on.
Jim, I want to talk about Cavs and the current Cavs team, but I can't get off this college recruiting thing. You told me a long time ago about the story when Alan McGuire came to your house the first time.
Oh, my God.
Would you feel like just kind of recalling that on the air just a little bit? Because I remember that just being a cool story.
It's an easy story. I don't know how my dad did it, but we went bankrupt twice before before I was 17, 18 years old. My dad was a foundry worker, and he poured steel, and we were very poor, but so were a lot of other people. But Al comes to the door. Check this out. He's got a brown double-knit suit on. I know. Mm-hmm. Brown double-knit, three-button with these fancy buttons and these pointed shoes. And then all of a sudden, there's a little redhead guy with him, about 5'8", looked like he was scared to come into the neighborhood. But Al was comfortable. Hell, he come from New York. You know, he's seen it all. So they come to the door. The redhead guy was the owner of the Bucks, Senator Cole. And they were best friends. And so they come through the door. The screen is torn, so flies can go in and out. My mother, when she got scared, she'd always be in the dining room ironing with a blue print dress on. And my dad was sitting there smoking a Marlboro, looking at black and white TV, holding his Rowan with his other hand and sitting in a big old couch that was being held up by a cinder block. And when you come through the front door, you know, in the old days, I don't know if you guys have had tile floors. But if when you tear tile, it looks like the coast of the United States, you know, because it's torn. And then all of a sudden, all the wood is splintered. because we never replaced it. So there's splinters. So you can't walk in that part of the room without getting splinters on your feet. So Al comes in, looks around in his New York style, like he's been there before. One of the greatest carmen of all time, though. And so he's looking around, and all of a sudden he says, "Nice pad, Jay."
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there going, "What?" And my dad gets up. They shake hands. Al sits across from him. And Al was there about 20 minutes. They talked about Marquette. My dad doesn't know anything about sports at all. You know, he's a foundry worker. He's blowing his cigarette, coughing. 4 years later, he would die of lung cancer. And so Al says, "Let's cut the crap. If Jimmy does what I tell you, he'll take you out of this."
Wow.
My dad said, "Okay." They shook hands. He left. And I ended up going to Marquette.
Yeah. That was it. That's it.
It was that easy.
Yeah. And Senator Herb Cole. I always picture that, just a little redhead Senator Cole.
Yeah, redhead. He's a redhead. I used to tease people. I said, "I wonder what Senator Cole's hair was when he was about 30 years old." "Why you say that?" I said, "What color you think his hair was?" Probably brown or black. I said, "No, he was a redhead, a bright red, a bright redhead." Yeah, he was a redhead.
Like carrot top, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like a carrot top, yeah.
Jim, I do have to ask you about the current Cavs, current NBA. I want to ask you about that because I haven't been getting any good Jonesisms on the road. Thoughts on the current team? They're coming off a nice win in San Antonio. In fact, I don't remember the Cavs ever in all the years I've been covering them skunking San Antonio in San Antonio like that. But that was a nice win. Thoughts on the Cavs right now? Where we're at?
Where we're at is fragile. You know, and that's been proven all season with the injuries. They just have to, you know, there's two mindsets. They want to develop, but they want to win. And those two will never meet.
Yeah.
When you have young players with inexperience and you're counting on those young people to help, they're a fundamental part of what it's going to take for you to win. But I love Sexton because he has a champion's heart. He has no fear. You can win a championship with him. And to do that, his role may change a little bit. Maybe he won't shoot as freely or be more calculating in his decision-making as far as scoring. But you can win a championship with him because the toughness that he has is the toughness you have to win a championship. And if you don't have that kind of guy, you better have somebody. If it's not Sexton, you better have somebody on your team that is tough enough. But I'm debating right now. I don't know who's better, Sexton or Garland. Garland is, listen, guys, Garland is really good.
Yeah.
Not just good, really good. Teams have a harder time stopping him than they do Sexton.
I liked him with an edge the other night. I thought he came out with an edge, and I hadn't seen that.
Well, he was upset.
Yeah, exactly. I thought he was upset from the
other
night.
That lady kicked him out of the game. I thought he was going to cry. You know, he's got that 15-year-old voice, and everything is new to him. The world is still a beautiful place. I mean,
the only way the Cavs win a championship if Darius Garland continues his quest to getting more technical fouls than Jim Jones did when he led the league.
Oh, that'll be rare. That'll be hard. Hey, Rafa, it's more expensive now.
Yeah.
It's more expensive now. So you got to pick your spots. You know, you got to look at your bank account every once a month to make sure that you have enough money, man. Because
you were making a lot of donations back in the day, Jim.
I was killing them. But let me tell you why. I got no respect because I wasn't a dominating center, and that's where our game was focused. The second thing is that they played favorites. And people used to ask me, "Well, look at Wes Unseld and so-and-so and Kareem. They never bitch at officials." I said, "They don't have to because they're going to get the calls anyway." I said, "I'm an undersized center, should be a power forward because I had the mobility to play for it," and look, the Lakers proved that. And I said, "I can't get a call. I can't touch them, but they can push me and beat me." I said, "I'm not going." I said, either I'm going to fight them or they're going to throw me out of the game, because I'm not going to let you win. I'm not going to be the victim. And that's the way I played. And I was physical. I would bang with anybody, hold my own, and hard foul them like they were hard fouling me. And when they only a couple guys threw their hands up, and one I pushed down, and the other one I just picked him up and slammed him down. And they were bigger than me. And they were bigger than me because, you know, basketball players aren't fighters. You know, we don't fight. We talk a lot, but we don't fight. If you ever see a basketball player fight, and you say, oh, my goodness, stop it. Just stop right there.
We have so many questions for you, Jay. Mine is, who was a tougher player in the day, Jim Jones, Austin Carr, or Campy Russell?
Oh, shoot. That wasn't even close. That wasn't even close. Because let me tell you what I had learned as a young player.
Uh-huh.
I had learned this from Lou Carnesecca when I was with the Nets. He said, you set the tone for how we play. And I'm thinking, he's talking like, I got to go out and get 20 and 10. You got Billy Paul starting. He said, no. And Lou would grab your face.
Buddy pulled his sweater up.
Yeah. And he was wearing sweaters then. And then he grabbed your face, and he said, you set the tone for how we play. If you're not physical, you're playing soft or scared, the rest of them will be there. And if somebody messes with your guards, you have to fight for them. I mean, that was the way I was raised. So I fought for Fritz Walker. Campy could handle himself. He was 6'8". But I fought for our little guys. I fought for Norm Nixon, Butch Carter, Allen. What was Allen's name that played in Michigan? Allen, I can't think of his name. I stood up for those guys. Let me tell you a story. Wes Unseld was doing a moving pick with his big ass. And every time Fritz would come off, he'd stick his ass up. I mean, and just level him. Now, you got to remember, at that time, Wes was probably the strongest guy in the league.
Yeah.
Never weighed less than 300. His legs were this big. Yeah. His calves. I'm not lying. And so I said, what you doing, Wes? And so I swore at him a couple of times. You know, Wes doesn't swear. He said, stop. You ain't got to swear. What's wrong with you? And I'm just going off big time. And he's coming toward me. And I'm going toward him. And I'm in no hurry, but he was in a hurry. And I'm hoping that somebody grabbed me. That's why I was going slow. Now, I'll fight Wes, but as strong as he is, he probably just grabbed me in one punch and I'm dead, you know. But I wasn't afraid of him. And that set the tone. You know, I had to stand up for my guards. You know, I've always been like that, you know.
That makes me wonder, are there any players in today's game that – is there a Jones-type player? Is there a player that you look at and you say, man – that's a guy I can really respect, or that's a guy who played like me, or that's a guy I'd like to play with?
Well, I like the mentality of Sexton. If you watch the last game, Jimmy Butler had some things to say when he went to the free throw line, and that's mm-hmm. when Sexton went off. That's when he really started playing hard, and after him wasn't scared of him, and elbowed him and caught Jimmy in the face a couple plays later. He did the same thing to Chris Paul his rookie year, and anybody else that he faced that he thought he was going to challenge him. He's not afraid to be competitive. And then if you watched him after the game, he walks up to Jimmy Butler and they shake hands and hug. See, that's respect. You see, if you don't stand up for yourself, this is what I teach my kids, then everybody will walk over you. Your wife won't respect you. Your kids won't respect you. Those that you love. I mean, I was afraid some nights when I go against some of these bigger guys, but I put the fear aside because I had a wife who was watching. I had brothers and sisters who were watching, and my kids were watching. So they helped me stand up. And then after a while, it just became my mentality. I played hard. I played hard every game, and I didn't cheat them. You know, I played 36, 38 minutes a game. And I hustled on defense, tried to block shots, maybe deferred a few, got in foul trouble. But I was active because I didn't have the weight and the muscles to play anymore. Really, I should have been a 28-minute player, but I was forced to play 36.
You think opponents just thought, oh, man, I got Jones tonight. This is going to be a tough night in the office. You know?
Exactly. Let me tell you what Kareem used to do. He was, you know, we'd be doing something. Kareem would be on the free throw line. He said, how you doing? Oh, you ain't gonna speak. You know, with a couple of you ain't gonna speak. because you lose your edge.
Yeah.
See, now players don't even think about a competitive edge. They either fight you or they run from you. You know, like Big Jokic, you know, he cries too much. He would get more calls from officials, but he's only getting 4.5 free throw shots a game, while other players are getting 8, 9, 10, 11, and he's just as good as they are. Why can't he get them? Because he cries all the time. And so does the other kid, Doncic. They cry too much. You got to quit crying, take the blows, and give it. You can't take the blows and not give it. That's why you get no respect. You know what I mean? It's that simple, man. I mean, it's a war out there. You know, our game is changing, but you have to set the tone.
So Jones, you know, you Joe Tate retires after 39 seasons with the Cavaliers. You had the luxury to work with him, and then come this young kid comes in to be your partner. He's right off the bat, he's the guy who has two first names as a name. You know, he's like, what's going through the mind of Jim Jones when he sees John Michael walked into the booth?
I didn't approve this question, by the way, Jim. Not that we have a script, but it wouldn't have been approved if we had one.
No. He does have two first names, like Tommy John, you know. Yeah. You know, so I knew he was unique. But the thing about I've always respected about John is his work ethic, and then his delivery, his timing, and then his insight. You know, his insight about the game. Those things are unique in our business. There's a lot of guys. If you listen to other broadcasts, you'll see a lot of stuff they talk about. But I guess they do so many games that they lose their discipline. So they get a little frivolous and they get a little on the edge. And the fan doesn't want to see you on the edge. He wants to hear you be consistent in your commentary. And that's what we always got from John. Plus, when we were having fun and talking and laughing, you know, he has a quick wit. And I like to ad lib, but he always knew when to stop it. You know, I would keep going all game. It would be the comedy hour. It would be Saturday Night Live, you know. But he knew when to quit it and get back to the game. And that's all timing and feel, all those fundamental things that our fans don't notice that contribute to a great broadcast. And he was the foundation for that.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to quickly say, you know, Jim, obviously the feeling's mutual. And again, I didn't know they were going to ask this question, but I learned a ton, and just being alongside you for all those years was something special. So I appreciate the kind words. Just know that the feeling's mutual.
Thank you. But let me say this one thing. The reason why I really respected you, because I saw how you treated your family off the court. And this is no jive, man. I love men who are into their kids and their wife. And I know who the real boss is in that house. I'm not lying. I know.
But I'm trying to get you to say something bad about John. So let me ask you.
Insightful as well.
Hey, and the best. Hey, and the best athlete. Athlete.
Yeah, that's a little humbling too.
His wife and his two beautiful kids. And the way you judge families is: do you give attention to your kids when you're busy doing something else? And John always respected his kids enough to let them know that what they're feeling, the attention that they were reaching for, was always important. And then I saw Big Jake, who we don't know what Jake is going to become. He'll either be president. Well, that's a downer to be president. But Jake is
linebacker for the Steelers.
Yeah. But I think Jake has got something. His ability to observe. When John gave him put him on his lap and gave him a stat sheet, and Jake couldn't read them, but he looked at the stat sheet and he was going like this, looking at the stat sheet. He was mimicking his father. That is another level of intellect, because that's how we learn, right? Observation, experience, and imagination. Jake has already got that stuff working for him already.
All right, enough good things about Joe Michael. Let me ask you.
I was going to say quickly, Jake loved sitting on Mr. Jim's lap.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. But he started to get heavy. Jake started to get heavy.
That's why. Why do you think I passed him? Yeah, why do you think I passed him over to you? I couldn't take it.
But I know
he
I
was
know.
Taking the feeling out of my leg. I couldn't feel my leg.
I know Marty Allen would play music sometimes, depending on what night we're celebrating at the field house or at the queue back then.
Yeah.
He would play music. Where, how would you grade John Michael's music knowledge?
Ooh.
Or music taste, oh, or lack thereof?
Well, let me put it like this. When there's been music on, I've never seen him pop his finger. I really can't remember even him bobbing his head to the beat. And I've never seen him dance. But that doesn't mean he can't.
Okay.
It doesn't mean he can't.
Yeah. Hey, Jim, talking about Marty, do you remember the Whitney Houston Madonna story?
Who was that one?
I don't know. So it was the day, unfortunately, that Whitney Houston passed, okay? And Marty had heard the news. And Marty, for those who aren't familiar, is our engineer who talks into Jim's ears and my ears during the show and tells us when to take a break or whatnot. And Marty said to me, he said, hey, does Jimmy have his headset on? And I said, yeah, he does. And Marty said, hey, Jimmy, you know, Whitney Houston died. And you said, oh, you know, and you guys went back and forth. And I said, hey, Marty, what? Do I not know who Whitney Houston is? You know, what do you mean?
He gave you no respect. No respect.
No, he said, oh, man, it's a brother thing. It's a brother thing. He goes, you got 10 seconds left to air. He goes, all right. 5, 4, 3. He goes, I tell you what, when Madonna dies, you'll be the first one. Yeah.
Hey, Jim, can you stick around for one more segment? Sure. We're going to do segment 3 on a Wine and Gold Radio. Can you hang out with us for just a little bit more?
I sure will. It's my pleasure.
Okay. We'll be right back on Wine and Gold Radio with the great Jim Jones.
Hi, this is Isaac Coral, and you're listening to Wine and Gold Radio, Cleveland, Ohio, America.
There's more of this.
Vujicic.
Nikola Vujicic. Vujicic.
Is that? No.
After this, on Wine and Gold Radio.
Designed from the land, for the land, the Team Shop has introduced a new in-house apparel line called the Land Collective. The first series is inspired by the 2020 NBA Draft. Each series will focus on a specific theme and feature exclusive pieces that will only be available while supplies last. Get these new looks from the Team Shop today only at Cavs.com/shop. For more style inspiration and to be the first to know about upcoming collections, follow at Land Collective on Instagram.
This is an interesting story. He is a descendant of Nigerian kings. And his first name, Al Farouk, means the chief has arrived.
Okay.
That's a pretty cool ancestral story, I think.
Yeah, I'm
is
sure.
that a word, ancestral?
Yeah, you can make them up on this show. Because
I know you do all the time.
All the time, man. I've invented a whole new Webster dictionary. In fact, we call it the Chongster Dictionary.
Now, back to Wine and Gold Radio.
Hello.
Hey, everybody. Back for the final segment of Wine and Gold Radio. And we're talking about musical tastes. And,
Or lack thereof.
Or lack thereof. And Marty Allen's musical taste. And so, go ahead, Rafa.
This is the guy, Marty Allen, who does a wonderful job dressing
the
up
best.
The broadcast. If you listen to the Cavs broadcast now with Tim Alcorn and Jim Jones on the Cavaliers Radio Network.
He's the voice of Wine and Gold Radio.
But he whatever night we're celebrating, he'll bring that to Tim. He used to do that with Cavs and Shoe when John and I used to do it on the radio. So out of all the knowledge, John, don't feel bad that he thought you didn't know who Whitney Houston was, but you know who Madonna is. He actually thought that Lindsey Buckingham was a woman, the lead singer for Fleetwood Mac. So that is one thing he'll never leave out. Like, he actually thought Lindsey Buckingham was the other voice of Fleetwood Mac.
Jim, I want to stay on the subject of music, and I want to go back to the national anthem because, again, you talk about brass strings, that takes brass something to do the national anthem in front of a crowd. I mean, it really does.
I could have never done it. I could never have did it with my acoustic because the strings, those brass strings, they eat your hands up.
Well, either way, now my coaching.
Yeah, but,
and Rafa's coaching, right?
But it took me, I would put the, because I could read music. It's not that difficult. So I was reading music. And then you've got this song that you've heard 10,000 times in your head. And I just figured it out, the fingering. Then I tried to figure out the shapes and the keys that were closest to me to do it. But the thing about it, I did it straight. And I sort of scared Tracy, who works with Tracy Merrick, because when she agreed to it, she was in Vegas. and we were in Vegas waiting for our car to come. It was like 101, and our sweats went down the side of my face, and she's standing there all cool and as a cucumber. And I said, Tracy, do you handle the pregame shows and stuff? She said, yeah. I said, I want to do the national anthem. And without hesitation, she said, oh, sure, you can. And I kept her to that. And I'm sure it had something to do with waiting about a half an hour for your car in 101 degree heat. It's kind of hard to tell somebody no.
Well, I have another idea for you. Maybe you want to propose it to Tracy. It might be too soon. It's impossible to do it for this year because it will have to be next Sunday. But that's when the Raptors come, Saturday or Sunday? Saturday, right? Next Saturday. But for next season, when the Raptors come to visit Rocket Mortgage Fieldhouse, I think it would be amazing if you play the American National Anthem and I sing O Canada before the game.
Oh, you can do that?
Yeah.
Let's do that.
Propose that.
We can do that.
Now we'll do a Jim Rafa duet. You play the Star Spangled Banner and I'll sing O Canada.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, Rafa auditioned last week on the show.
Like
he killed it.
Let's do it, man.
You did? I'd do it. I would do it because, because in the National Anthem, you've got all that fill space. And now I know how to fill. I mean, I can do some blues in between there. I mean, it won't be Marvin Gaye.
Remember, never go right into the anthem. You got to go in with a little spice, a little Jim spice.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I could play it a little better. A little better. A little better. Take me about a week to get it down again.
Yeah.
But I could put a little blues tint to it.
You have to.
Okay, next year. They were holding that. Next year, Toronto, Jim plays the national anthem.
When's the schedule coming out?
Yes, we start practicing.
Hey, let's take a look ahead at what we have coming up this week for Cavs. Thursday night at Oklahoma City. Boy, I looked at Oklahoma City's roster. I don't know. I follow the NBA pretty closely.
That is one game that I'm going to watch tonight or tomorrow. When is it?
I know they played the night before.
They played tonight.
They played tonight.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to watch that game to kind of figure out.
I'm gonna be practicing tonight just to right. see what they look like.
Yeah,
they have some guys banged up too. They have a number of regulars out of their lineup as well, so it's gonna be interesting come tomorrow night.
Yeah, so that's a winnable game. I love Oklahoma City. That's kind of to me, that's one of the most underrated arenas in the league. I actually kind of like.
I hate it.
You hate it.
The position
like it.
For me to broadcast is one of the worst. It's
That's
worse
a very
than
selfish
Toronto
way
and
to
Chicago.
Look at things.
Why not? How else am I going to look at it? How do you like? Why do you like it? There's something you like yourself.
I like it because, to be
That's
honest,
selfish.
It's spacious. They're courteous. I like that they
it's
say
the only arena
I like
where
that
they
say a prayer before the game.
Yeah.
Not that I care about a prayer, but I like that they say to the NBA, "We're doing it, and that's our thing. We're doing it."
Maybe next time I'll pray for them to give me a spot where I can see the full court, and then I'll like it around.
But Rafa, is anything as bad as Toronto?
Oklahoma City,
the gondola.
Oklahoma City. Yeah.
In Toronto, at least I can see the whole court.
In Oklahoma City,
if I sit like a normal human being sits, not only I get a table the size that you get for yourself, for myself, my engineer, this Oklahoma Spanish broadcaster and his engineer with 1960s size equipment, but if I sit like a normal human being does, I see half the court, the second half. Like I don't see the benches. So I have to either lean in or stand up the whole game.
In Oklahoma City. Okay. Well, I hope we stomp them just for that reason.
Yeah, I hope so too. Yeah.
Okay. And then
Joe, I'm not going to try to pull cold water on your fire, but that's probably the worst place we could go for me, because every morning I get up, because we get ready to do the pregame or we're going to shoot around, I jump up out of the bed, I run to the window because I said, "Damn, I thought I heard cattle in the street." No.
I'll tell you what, we played there on, I think, a Tuesday night, and it was a Monday night, and I looked out at about 10 o'clock. I mean, you saw everything but a tumbleweed.
Although I love the hotel now with the Penguins.
Yeah, I love.
So you can actually put them on the door.
They have a new artistic. We stay in at a museum hotel, which is 21. Good. But Jim, you're right, man. Oklahoma City is.
This is. I looked at the calendar, and this is one trip I am happy I'm not on. Even though they went to Miami, my hometown first, but they, you know, San Antonio, which is a rancho, and Oklahoma back to back, and then 2 days in Oklahoma City. I don't know. Nothing against the city, but
I disagree. I love. I really like Oklahoma City.
The the broadcast spot, Jimmy, in San Antonio.
I know.
My laptop becomes a laptop because I have just like a 6 inches long tape, wide table.
Yeah, you and I have talked about some of those locations they put you in.
Yeah.
Which is.
But we won, so it's good. Okay. Everything forgets.
Okay.
Well, we were winning then, too, a little bit.
Yeah.
Okay. So Thursday night, winnable game. I'm not saying they're going to. Winnable game. Then they come back for a nice back-to-back, finally come home. What do they play? 6, 7 of 8 on the road by that point?
Yes, remember, this is the game that got moved. The Toronto game was supposed to be Friday, but now it's going to be a Saturday game and then Sunday against NOLA.
Yeah, so Toronto and New Orleans, Saturday, Sunday. Last time Toronto came in, they had a little comeback in the fourth quarter, but the Cavs handled them, kind of manhandled Toronto last time they were here, so Saturday night.
Yeah, it's almost like the denominator is health. Mm-hmm. You know, who's healthy, who's not, but all these games being crunched into 2 months, you're going to have injuries. I mean, what happened to James Harden was predictable. You know, what happened to Durant was predictable. You know, what wasn't predictable was Kyrie didn't feel like playing, and he said, "I'll be back in a week." You know, how do you plan for that? But anyway, it's just one of those seasons, and it's going to be about who's left standing.
Yeah,
and it's not even about momentum, because you just want to get there. You just want to get there, and then let's figure this thing out. It's almost like a bubble mentality.
The next night, and I agree with that. The NBA season can be a war of attrition. I mean, especially with the schedule like this. I mean, it's a matter of staying healthy just long enough. Sunday night, Zion Williamson and the Pelicans come in. Jim, I'd be curious to get your take on Zion Williamson. Obviously, I don't sit next to you for the games. What are your thoughts on? There's a unique big man. What do you think? What are your thoughts on him?
When our league adjusts to him, there's a chance they may not, just like Wilt. But right now, he's just physically dominating. And as the player profile changes and our league is moving back toward bigs who can block shots and defend and rebound and switch out on other big smaller players, he may have some trouble down the road if he doesn't extend his game.
Yeah.
He's a two-dribble guy in the half court, and I've always said all you need is two dribbles in the half court. But what happens when they counter you and you have to take one or two more dribbles and change direction? He doesn't do that. He'll jab one way, but he's going left.
Yeah.
And he's only got two strong dribbles. So if you can make him put it down a third time, I don't think when people do scouting reports, they really need to see you need to deny him the ball, you know. And he's good for what he does. He's good. The problem is, what kind of players does he need around him to be effective in the playoffs?
Great call.
You know.
Yeah. Jim, you mentioned Zion in today's NBA, and I had to ask you before we let you go, I had to ask, what are your thoughts on if a player from your era asks you, what are your thoughts on today's NBA, the way it is, the scoring, the three-point shooting? What are your – I know it's a kind of an overarching question, but what are your thoughts on today's NBA?
Ridiculous amount of money. And it's only ridiculous because I'm not making it. You know, think about it. They got guys averaging 14 points a game, man. They're making $15 to $20 million a year. Really? You know, we always equated the amount of money you make to your performance, and the stats were the foundation for that. But some of these guys haven't held up their end, and a lot of these teams are really – they're making money, but they're not making as much money as they probably should. But as Wayne Embry used to say, it's the cost of doing business. Yeah. If you need this guy, you know, to be effective and compete every night and help you win, then you pay him money. The second thing is too many guards. It's too many little guys for me. You know, now, you know, if you can get a kid 6'7", 6'8", 6'9", who can come in and do the same things that guards can do. So I just want the league, if you're going down this path, one thing they have to do, they have to improve the officiating because the officials, I know they're breaking in a whole bunch of new faces because there's so many I haven't seen before, but they have to improve the officiating. I don't think you need to add a fourth. I think replay sometimes can be too much, but the officials in our league get no respect because they don't seem to have a feel for the game. And, you know, they're just guys with a job. You know, in the old days, those old guys like Mindy Rudolph, you know, and all those guys, they loved the game. They grew up with it. They played it at CYO. You know, they loved it. But these kids, it's just a high-paying job, and you feel that. And then they don't even have the sensitivity of the culture. Just because I cussed at you, you don't have to kick me out of the game. Just because I slammed my hand on the floor and threw the ball back and it was 6 feet from you and you took it as a threat. Or like the guy told LeBron, he was coming at me and I felt threatened. So LeBron gets his first really? With a guy, they don't even know the history. This guy, the way he gets beat up night in, night out, had never gotten a T. And all of a sudden you give him one because you feel threatened. Why? Because he was big and tall and he disagreed with you. You see, they don't even understand the culture. I think they need to do a cultural sensitivity session for about 6 months with some of these guys before they hire them. Because like John Michael once told me, there is no group of officiating that has more effect on the game than NBA officiating. And you remember you told me that? Hockey, baseball? No.
Definitely.
It's basketball. They can change the course of a game by making one bad call or not making a call at all.
Yeah. I have to laugh real quick. You talk about players making money. I always laugh watching the telecast. John Michael always say something about a player's contract. You know, I could tell Austin Carr's going to go, ooh.
Yeah.
He'll kind of, John will mention some journeyman he just signed for $14 million, and I could just, I could feel Austin just, oh.
I wish I, hey, you know what? I wish they would, you should tell Brett that when you make that comment, show Austin's face.
Put him in the corner, like, on the split screen. Like, oh.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us on Wine and Gold Radio. Man, it was a blast having you on. You got to come back sometime.
Sure will. It's my pleasure, guys. Talk to you.
Thanks, okay. Jim. Get ready. Jim, Toronto next year. You and I.
Yep.
Anthem.
Okay, babe.
Yeah.
That was our friend, our good friend, Jim Jones, the one and only Jim Jones.
The big teddy bear.
He is a big teddy bear, but he could also squash your head like a walnut if he wanted to. So,
what do you say he did to you? He
fanned me.
He fanned you.
I told him, I said something. I said something.
He said, talk to the hand?
Yeah, I said something about a coach I liked, and we were walking into shoot around, and he just gave me that big paw and said, he just fanned me, which is like it would have been an automatic technical in the pros.
Yeah.
It was. Okay, we're going to wrap up here. Are we on episode 12 of Wanico Radio?
One of those, yeah.
Okay, we're on one of these. 12. Got to thank, of course, Lucy Varis. I love Lucy. Yeah, we all do. Rob Hageman, Joe Moner, Joe Fritchin, great Joe Fritchin, Casey Koulis, who has shortchanged because I always say he's got the coolest name in broadcasting, but he's actually one of the coolest dudes in broadcasting, yeah. Casey Koulis. Peter Berman, Matt of the North, Matt Gold, the Golden Boy, the hardest working man in show business, our friend, my friend, your friend, D-Mac. He's one of my favorite humans in the world. Of course, we have to thank our special guest, Jim Jones, and the dynamic duo of Dirty Kurt and Big Daddy, Marty Allen.
Let's go, Big Daddy.
We'll see you next week on Wine and Gold Radio. And as always, good night, Freddie Mac, wherever you are.
You have to be kidding me!
You're listening to Wine and Gold Radio.
Wow! El Torito en Fuego!
Cleveland.
Oh, mercy.
Ohio.
Oh, Arnie.
America.
Whoa.